Welcome to the Language of Yoga podcast. I'm Becca Schmidt, and I'm authentically happy that you are here listening to our very first episode. The focus of this podcast will always be to support you, the yoga teacher, with good, solid content on how to use language, cueing techniques, and most importantly, themes to deepen the class experience for your students. So every week, I'll be featuring a new yoga theme to inspire you and help you get creative with your words. Those words can become little threads of wisdom your students can take out into the real world. I'm going to help you get comfortable with your words as you use stories and metaphors and contemporary references to all those ancient yoga concepts we never know what to do with, right? We'll also talk about the power of vocal inflection, volume, repetition, humor, words of compassion, loving kindness, and support, and the importance of silence. We'll also chat about how having a theme in your class will anchor you as a teacher. So having a theme becomes your base for teaching asana, pranayama, and some specific sequencings, your mantras, your intentions, your guided meditations, and even your mudras will be affected by the theme you choose for the week. Sometimes this podcast will focus on just one theme. Maybe a couple weeks will be spent on the same thing as we stretch it out and get a little bit deeper. And sometimes I'll bring in another instructor, an experienced instructor who also uses theming for their classes. In this podcast, I will always be authentic. I may make mistakes, and that's okay every once in a while, right? I will respect your time. So here we go. Whenever I discover a new podcast, I always want to know about the person behind the mic. What do they look like? Who are they? What are they going to talk about? So I thought I would tell you a little bit about me, a little peek behind the scenes. I'm a yoga teacher with 1,000 hours of teacher training throughout this country. I've been teaching yoga since 2004, and I've been teaching about an average of 10 classes a week. So when we do the math, that's 520 classes a year times 20 years. That is 10,000 classes, my friends, 10,000 classes, which I like to think about that 10,000 hour mark as 10,000 success stories, but I'm a realist, and I know that it is also 10,000 hard lessons and mistakes I've made over the years. I've taught so many different types of yoga, and I know I've made mistakes in all of them, but I've also done my best to rectify some of those mistakes. I've taught prenatal classes, power yoga, restorative, therapeutic style yoga for senior citizens, yoga at the office, private sessions, lakeside yoga, poolside yoga, and everything in between. I even taught, for a while, I taught trauma nurses between their shifts. And that was very powerful. It was a really cool experience because I knew that I was making a difference for them. So some yoga classes, no matter who you are, they will flow seamlessly and everything comes together. But other times you hit the mat and you feel awkward and clumsy and cumbersome, right? So I want to share some stories of my yoga classes where things did go well and others where they were a little bit clumsy. And because I can see around the corner, I've been where you are, hopefully, I can tell you how I might have done things differently. So back to where we are, this podcast is being recorded in a basement studio on the campus of Rollins College in Winter Park, Florida. It's a gorgeous campus, 140 years old, I did my math, with hundreds of beautiful oak trees with moss hanging from them. And our backdrop is Lake Virginia, where you see students pretty much every day just out there paddling their boats or their paddle boards or water skiing. And I'm here with my two producers, Desica and Jayanne, who incidentally are identical twins, just like me. So we're excited to embark on this journey with you. Thank you for joining us. So now to get a little into the nitty-gritty here, in the past 20 years that I've been teaching yoga, I will say that the one thing that has really been an anchor for me is having a theme for my classes. So let me ask you a couple of questions about maybe your most recent teaching classes. Have you ever arrived to teach a class and just you go blank? You stand there and you're just asking yourself, what on earth am I teaching today? Even if you teach a class like Ashtanga, you might have the poses down and you might have your anatomy down, but then you hope that you're not teaching in a rote fashion, mechanically, where you're not resonating, you're not being a powerful force to your students. You may hit the mat with insecurity. You might even hit the mat with an imposter syndrome, especially if you're a relatively new teacher. You're just out of yoga teacher training and you feel like, oh, I don't know what I'm doing. That's where a theme can really help you. A theme is exactly what you need. Because I teach pretty much 52 weeks out of the year, I have in my pocket 52 different themes. And every Sunday night, I study up on the new theme for my week's classes. And I'll just dive in a little bit. Maybe I need to refresh myself or even study the pronunciation of something a little bit more. So the theme that you choose on Monday morning is going to be your guide for the asanas and also the language, of course, that you use for cueing. So one of the things I like to think about is how subtly you bring in the theme. If it's, let's say, Valentine's Day, you might say, hello, everyone. Good morning. Valentine's Day is just a few days away. Let's talk about heart energy. And you dive right in and you talk about the anahata chakra. You talk about heart space and maybe even the physical heart. So that can be more of a blatant way of bringing in your theme. But so often, my students would probably not, within the first few minutes of class, have any idea what my theme is, but I may have already referenced it two or three times. I bring it in very subtly. And those are some of the cueing words that we'll talk about in later episodes, how to be really subtle, but also very powerful about that. As I mentioned earlier, a weekly theme helps you anchor, okay? Themes are also really important for workshops, retreats, yoga teacher training classes. I can't think of anything easier than if you create, you could even name probably 15 themes off the top of your head on what you could teach workshops on. All kinds of things, fire, water, chakras, yamas, niyamas, goddesses. There are so many things that you can just say, hey, that would make a great workshop, and I could probably get 10 to 20 people to be interested in this topic and bring it on, right? So the theme, like I said before, is not always obvious. It might be loosely throughout your class, but the important things to remember is that what you say, these are really important, so grab your notebook. The things you say to your students must be relevant, very important. They must be accurate and also include the essential language that they're going to resonate with. The theme enriches your students' practice by giving them little nuggets, or I like to say stitches, because we think about the Yoga Sutras, which the word sutra is actually stitch. So we weave together all these little nuggets that your students can take in for a deeper understanding of their practice, right? You want to be that teacher who is bringing not just postures, you want to bring in why they're doing the postures. You want to ask them, you want them to go into inquiry, how do I feel in this posture? And then how do I feel on the edge of the posture? Do I want to get out? Can I stay in? How does that relate to my character? So there's a lot going on a yoga mat. And honestly, you're cheating your students if you have them just do, you know, what I call yoga by numbers, just filling in, copy me yoga, filling in the blanks. You want to actually have them feel the whole time they're in their practice. So here's some of the nitty gritty about a theme. So throughout the year, let's say you already have your 52 themes all put together and want them in an organized fashion. So You could present, starting in January, all your themes in alphabetical order. I don't really recommend that one. That's how I file my themes. I like to file my themes in alphabetical order. Ahimsa, anahata, all the things that start with A's, then B's, then C's, and so on, just so I can find them. But you want to have it in a sequence that's going to make sense for your students. So think about all the different threads that you can draw upon. The Yoga Sutras, which are those threads, those laws of yoga. We have the eight limbs of yoga, which include the yamas and the niyamas. You can talk at least seven times about the chakras, right? Probably a lot more, but you can address those seven energy centers and then talk about how the chakra is even bigger than just those seven energies. It's way bigger than that. And I'll address some of that in a little bit. You might also have themes that coincide with the moon cycles, right? Full moon. One of my topics is the fullness of life. And when it's a full moon, especially if we're outside and we can actually see the moon, we'll do some gazing upward and that perspective of seeing something that is full and it aligns with the fullness in our own lives and where we have the sense of completeness, graduation from college, perhaps, or something that is on the cusp of manifesting in your life, right? We think about the fullness, the beauty we have in our lives. And that's just a little theme about the moon, right? Goes so much deeper. The four seasons, maybe on the cusp of the seasons, we talk about that. We live in Florida, so we really don't have four seasons. We just have springtime all the time. So you could talk about how we feel as seasons change. And then we might take a lens outward from that and we see how life changes, right? The seasons of our lives, they change. And our perspective and what's important to us when we're a teen or in college is going to be very different when we become a parent, perhaps, and when we maybe look at retirement. We just see things differently. So you can talk about seasons changing. And then, of course, like I mentioned with Valentine's Day, that would be a little bit more of a playful topic. You can talk about love on Valentine's Day. A lot of themes in yoga, of course, that relate back to love. In a heat wave, maybe you talk about fire, the physical fire, rising up of the phoenix out of the ashes. There's so many ways to talk about fire. And then that's one that's really pretty easy to relate back to the asana, the physical practice, especially if you're teaching a strenuous yoga, a power yoga, or yoga full of heat. We talk about heat in the body. And then, of course, water. Water is one of my favorite topics because I have a background in dance, so I love to flow my poses. That might be something if it's raining, and you can use a good playlist with that too, how to use music as part of your theming for classes. December is a really good time to talk about contentment, santosha. And we talk a little bit about just being happy with what you have, right? We have this concept of, oh, it's a holiday and it's a gift-giving season, so I want this, I need this. And we get in that big hamster wheel, right? That's what we're thinking about. But what if we shift it and we stop that hamster wheel and we thought about how content we are with what we have? So that's a good topic or a good theme for that. And then January is a good month to have a conversation about the root chakra and feeling grounded and a starting place. I've been to classes where, you know, on January 1st or 2nd or 3rd, we talk about what is your New Year's resolution? That's 1979 to me. When we're in yoga, we want to talk about where we are now, where is our mindset, and how we might just be really aware of our 2 feet on the earth, how we feel grounded, and then we think about what we want to do next, our intentions. So feel free. I have the 52 themes that are written in a book form and also blog form, but you're going to have themes that you're going to create yourself. You may have 14 themes on the chakras. talk about the chakras in general and then break down each of the chakras, go into some depth about what they are. It's an incredible energy system that has been documented in so many different cultures. And it's just important that you don't shortchange that. So dive in a little bit deep there. So I should have mentioned this when I was just talking about who I am, but what I am not is a yoga historian or a yoga scholar. My knowledge is really just from a really high interest in the discipline of yoga. I read a lot of books. I attend workshops, and I've attended classes with yoga teachers that are more experienced than me. And I ask questions and I listen carefully. And I also, aside from just the theming and the philosophical sides of things, I watch a lot of teachers and I admire certain teachers, the way they capture the attention of their students or how what they say really lands. I listen for their vocal variety. I listen for their language. So that's what teaches me, is just being around other people who know more than I do. And I've collected a lot of books. At one point, I counted 108 books. And if you know yoga, you know 108 is a very significant number. But I know that I have more than that now. The more you know, the more you don't know. There's a lot out there. Once you know a little, then you know there's 10 times more that you could still learn about. So if you're a new yoga teacher, don't get hung up on what you don't know. I want you to be really proud of and really embrace what you do know. Start what you learned in your yoga teacher training. Flesh up those parts that were really interesting to you, and then get to know that topic more deeply. So if the chakras did not resonate with you whatsoever, take it somewhere else. And maybe those will circle around. Likely they will circle around to you again. I have a really short story. One of my first yoga teacher training was at the Southwest Institute of Healing Arts in Tempe, Arizona. And the teacher asked us to really embrace fish pose. And fish pose is a heart-opening pose. You're on your back, you're arching your back. And I dreaded that pose. I would go to yoga teacher training and say, I just hope we don't have to do that pose today. And there was a pivotal moment. I didn't realize the reason for the pose. And I think that was one reason I didn't like it. I didn't get it. Like, why are we doing this? It doesn't make any sense to me. It hurts. I don't really care for it. And the partner I had that day said, wait a minute, Becca, do you not really get why we do this pose? It's to help you open your heart. And bang, I said, okay, it's a pose I need. It's a pose I need in this very moment. I don't like something. Let me open my heart to it, right? So that's going to happen in your yoga career, where you're going to maybe feel stuck or a dislike for something, but don't close that door. Just know that maybe it's just not the right time to fall in love with something. And that's why themes can be so amazing, because you can really dive into something that you have a little bit of interest in or know you need it. And then you read, study, find some good resources, and then you are in a position where you can teach it. And when you teach something, you learn something. So if there is part of a theme that you say you're interested in, but you know it's not in your wheelhouse, be really careful that you don't misspeak or make assumptions about your topic. I experienced a class where a yoga teacher was talking about chakras. And she said, I don't even know how many there are. Aren't there 5 or 6 or 7 chakras? And she was looking at me because she knew I had a yoga background. I'm like, oh boy, lady, please, if you're going to talk about chakras, know your information. And it's okay to say, I am still learning about blank, but just be cautious on making a statement that isn't true. So once you do your research, maybe you practice your themes with fellow yoga teachers, or you practice them with your friends, then you're presenting this very authentically, maybe a little artfully and concisely. That's something that I struggle with because I love to talk. So sometimes I'm not as concise as I should be. The better that you embrace it and that you practice it, the more impact it's going to be for your students. Here are just a couple of guidelines as you prepare for your class themes. The one that I think is really easy to do is to understand your theme in terms of your own life. So I'll give you an example. Aparigraha is the concept of non-greed, non-attachment. It's not to take things, not to be greedy. You can practice Aparigraha throughout your own day. Maybe you think about all the possessions you have. If somebody were to walk into your kitchen and see 5 can openers and duplicate utensils or 100 cups and there's only 2 of you living there, that might look like kind of needing things, an attachment to things, right? Sometimes I like to think about what would you take if you suddenly had an opportunity to live in a tiny house, right? What could you not be attached to? What possessions could you let go? When we think about yoga, we want to think about generosity as well. What can you let go in your life? Possessions is an easy one to start with that might serve someone else. Can you let go of some of your clothing? Coats. You have 5 coats. We live in Florida. We probably barely have 1 coat. I think I have 1 sweater. But maybe you're in a place where, I'll say Florida again, maybe we have 7 bathing suits and 14 pairs of flip-flops. Do we need that? No. Let's let go. Let's have less attachment on stuff. Every time maybe you buy something new, you let go of something in your life. There's an expression that says, when you can let go of things, like letting go of something from the past, tangible or intangible, you will live more fully in the present. This is, again, a preparation for putting together your class theme. Have an understanding of the bigger picture and not just the nuanced version of your theme. So if you're talking about one of the chakras, you may have to describe what the overall chakra energy system is, right? And have at least a working knowledge of the characteristics of all the chakras, the color, the sounds, the elements, the physical and energetic zones of the chakras. Also understand that the chakras overlay with Eastern medicine, that we talk about imbalances of the chakras. It's a part of the meridian system, and there's a lot to teach about the chakras. So if you're going to talk about one, just make sure your students, if they have questions, you have a working understanding of what the bigger picture is. We tend to, I think as yoga teachers in general, a lot of us tend to say, oh, the base chakra, the mula chakra is being grounded. And then next we whip up to the next one and the next one. And then we whip up to the Vishuddha chakra, and that's the throat energy. That one is how you talk. And the third eye is how you dream. We oversimplify it very often, and we don't always put them in context of them relating to one another. Pronounce your words correctly. Take time to learn how to say, if you're going to use Sanskrit words, they appear in some of the poses that we do. Please know how to say them, but also know what they relate to. Some of them are foot, pada, hasta, hand, sun is suri, and so on. It's really not out of the scope of being a good yoga teacher to know how to pronounce Sanskrit words. You don't need to know how to say sentences or write in Sanskrit, but at least have the basic understanding, because the way the poses are organized, if you think of Ashtanga yoga, the proximity, head to foot, head to knee, the pose is the head and the knee touching or coming together. So they're relative to each other. It just helps you understand the poses better, if nothing else. I'm not a gigantic fan of just typing something in Google and taking a look at the first entry and say, oh, there's my fact. So whether you're looking up how to pronounce a word or you are looking up a fact, do go deeper. I do use Google Translate for pronunciation. I find that pretty accurate. Some of the Sanskrit words or Hindi words will not include the last vowel, like an A, like pranayam and pranayama. So you hear it both ways. Find what is most true to you and listen. I like to go into a YouTube video, but make sure it is someone of standing, a guru, or someone who is trustworthy, and then just listen to them talk. And then listen to another one and listen to another one. The founder of yoga, Patanjali. I've heard that mispronounced so many times. But if you just practice it, you can do it. Patanjali. Getting into how to use the asana, the actual poses with your stories. If your theme is around strength, or indecision or conflict. The pose that comes to my mind is Warrior Two, because Warrior Two is in itself the pose of Arjuna, who was a great warrior. When you hold it for a long time, your thigh is burning, your arms are burning. It's a very powerful pose, but it's also a pose of the heart. It's a pose of indecision and losing faith and gaining faith again. If you have time to read a little bit of the history of the poses and why they're named the way they are, then you can very often learn those stories around them, like Arjuna, Ganesha, some of the poses, dancer pose, Lord of the Fishes pose, Hanuman, which is the split pose. It's about a monkey who leaped over the river Ganges for friendship. So there are lots of wonderful stories to tell. One of the stories that I like to use when I use the theme of Aparigraha or non-greed is from Aesop's Fables. And Aesop's Fables is pretty much always an oral tradition. The oral stories are passed down over the centuries. So you might see five or six different renditions of the story of the monkey. I remember it as monkeys reaching for tangerines and monkeys reaching for mangoes. And the last time I dove in, it's about monkeys reaching for peanuts. So I'll tell you a little bit about that story, how possessiveness can hold us down. The story goes like this. Once upon a time, a hungry monkey came upon a jar filled with delicious peanuts. With excitement, he reached his hand into the jar of nuts and grabbed as many as he could hold, tightened his fist, grasping the nuts. But then when he tried to pull his hand out of the jar, his clenched fist was too big to fit out of the jar. The monkey pulled and tugged, but he refused to let go of his grasp. In a nutshell, that is a nice parody for Aparigraha, right? If you're holding on to something so tightly, you might lose something very big. In this case, the monkey lost his freedom. He was stuck. He was caught. And we can take that as a message in our own life. What are we hanging on to that might pull us back, right? And it might not be a thing at all. It might be a concept. It might be an idea of what we coulda, shoulda, woulda been instead of what we can be, because we're back here grasping what we think we should be holding, and in reality, we should let go. Next time, we're going to talk a lot more about some specific themes. We touched upon Aparigraha today, that theme of non-attachment and non-grasping. But we'll go into quite a few other themes, and we'll probably start with the yamas and the niyamas, the ethical principles of yoga, because they're pretty easy to relate to in 2024. We all have what we consider our own ethics, the way we live, and how we treat others. So it really is very pertinent to our daily lives. Thank you so much for tuning in. And I am really excited to bring some of my experiences to you. And I end my classes the same way every time. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti Om.